Good evening, everyone, and a very warm welcome to the Peace Alliance monthly field call for the month of May. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and I'm very grateful to you all for spending some time on your Tuesday evening together to connect around peace-building practices and policies and the movement for peace-building throughout the country and indeed throughout the world. We have a great call lined up this evening. I'm waiting for our special guest, Hillary Shelton, to join us, so I may rearrange the agenda a little bit. Nancy, I hope you're listening. I can see you're on the call. I think what we're going to try to do first is ask Nancy to step up with a Department of Peacebuilding update and also some news about the Mother's Day campaign, the Mother's Day Peace Wants a Piece of the Pie campaign. And I may interrupt her at some point when Mr. Shelton joins us. Mr. Shelton is the head of the Washington Bureau of the NAACP, and as such has quite a lot of responsibilities, and it's possible that something came up at the last minute that has kept him from joining us on time. So if that's okay with Nancy, that's my plan. And then when we hear from Mr. Shelton, then we'll have a chance to have some discussion and question and answers with him. Then we're going to have some coaching on our monthly action, and everybody on the call now should have received an email about 30 minutes ago with some attachments, and one of those attachments is the action sheet for this month, and the other attachments are position papers from the NAACP on the three bills that we're going to be asking you to advocate for this month, as well as a position paper on gun safety legislation. And that applies to a variety of bills, which we talked about in the March call. So you can look back at listen to the recording from the March field call if you want to hear more details about the various gun safety bills that are out there in the world right now. And after all that, we'll have a chance to hear shares from the field. We want to hear what's happening with you in your neighborhood, in your schools, in your political organizing. What does your peace building field look like in your life? So I'm going to unmute Nancy and just hope that she's ready to go. We were going to have her a little bit later in the call. Nancy, what do you think? Will you give us your report on the front end and be prepared to possibly be interrupted?
Yes, I will.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan. Well, I first just wanted to say that I'm very saddened by today's decision by Donald Trump to withdraw from the Iran deal. It reminds me of a lecture I just heard on relating to Martin Luther King's book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community. And I feel like he's choosing chaos, and that makes it all the more important that we choose community. So given that, the Department of Peacebuilding segment, relating to that bill, it encompasses what the Peace Alliance defines as the five cornerstones of peace building, and Department of Peace is a way to make practical our vision for a culture of peace and to institutionalize making peace a priority in our nation. As most of you know, there is a bill in Congress right now, H.R. 1111. It's sponsored by Congresswoman Barbara Lee and currently has 40 co-sponsors. And just as a slight word of encouragement, many of those co-sponsors came on board because of our advocacy. So Eleanor Roosevelt said it isn't enough to talk about peace. One must believe in it. It isn't enough to believe in it. One must work at it. So I'm going to mention some of the things that have been going on in the peace building and Department of Peace corner in the last month or so. One interesting thing that came up was on, I think it was April 24th, on the Stephen Colbert show. He started talking, he was interviewing Rowan Farrow about a book called War on Peace, and related mostly to the State Department and how it's been devastated under this administration. But he also went into a discussion about the Department of Peacebuilding. And as a result of that, quite a few of us from the national campaign and the California campaign wrote to Colbert and suggested that he invite Barbara Lee on to be a guest and to talk more about the updated version of that bill. He was more or less referring to the bill when it was under Dennis Kucinich. So that's one thing. And then Dennis Kucinich, as a lot of you know, is running for governor of Ohio, and the primary is today. I don't know if any results have come in yet or not, but on he recently announced in connection with that his plan to create a division of peace and nonviolence as part of the Department of Health in Ohio. So that would be a really interesting development. World Beyond War has now put up billboards around in a lot of different cities, and they're collecting money right now to put up billboards in Washington, D.C., relating to, like, one of them would say 3% of the U.S. military fund, military funding could end starvation on this earth, and different things like that. As you know, I guess I could mention, there are a lot of actions that we in the Department of Peace Building segment are working on, and hope that a lot of you will take some of these actions. They include the Mother's Day Pie meetings, which are starting right about now. And as many of you as can, we hope you'll schedule meetings with your congresspeople. The idea of a department, the idea of a Mother's Day pie meetings is Julia Ward Howe originally called for a day of peace after she tended to the wounded in the Civil War and saw up close and personal what war does to people. So we use this as an opportunity to go to our congresspeople and to advocate for peace building legislation, including Department of Peace Building, including the kinds of things we'll talk about tonight, including ban on the assault weapons and different things like that. So we sent out an e-blast just recently, I think it was May 2nd, that gives all the details, everything you would need to know to organize that. So it gives you the links to things you could take with you to your meetings and guidance on how you could conduct those meetings and other suggestions. So we hope you all will do this. It's really actually a really fun action, and people welcome us year after year, probably mostly because they love pie, but also it's just it's a positive thing to do, and it's a good way to get to know your representatives and to start building some rapport.
Nancy?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you, as I promised I might. Thank you so much for being flexible. I'd love for you to abridge your report and come back to it in about 25 or 30 minutes, because I'm pleased to announce that Mr. Hillary Shelton has joined us. Welcome to the call, Mr. Shelton.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Listen, I apologize. Can you do me a favor? I'm actually in a taxi on my way home.
Okay.
Can you give me about 10 minutes and I can call right back in?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That'll be fantastic. I apologize. We're a little late getting done on the Hill.
No problem. Just to let you know, when you first dial in, you'll probably hear silence for a few seconds because you're dialing into the green room. So I'll see you on the screen, and then I'll bring you into the main room.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Thank you so much, and I look forward to it.
All right, sounds great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Nancy, back to you.
Okay. Okay. Another action we suggest that people could take is recruiting organizations to be endorsers of the Department of Peace Building. And I think it went out just today, our newsletter, our quarterly newsletter. In that, we talk about how you can go about recruiting endorsers. And it's actually a really powerful tool. When we go to lobby with members of Congress, we hand them this sheet of paper, which is now becoming almost three sheets of paper, organizations who endorse the Department of Peacebuilding, and it's also a really good networking tool to learn about other organizations and for them to learn about us, and a way to build community. So would love for any and all of you to connect with the organizations that you know about, and it's actually surprising probably how many organizations people are connected with. Just in the last few months, we've gotten, so many. We've gotten people like Dolores Huerta. We've gotten the city council president of San Diego, and Salute Integrity, San Diegans for Gun Violence Prevention. Just the last week or so, the Berkeley Fellowship of Universal Unitarians, and Transcend and the Unity Center of San Diego. So take a look at that, the e-news that went out today, and it talks about all that. And then sort of a final thing, you could all save the date for, we'll be having advocacy days in Washington, D.C., in September, the last week of September, and we'll be sending out an email about that. But this is a really fun thing to do, to go to Capitol Hill and meet with congresspeople and get a feel for how things work, and advocate for peace building. So I hope any of you will consider that. I don't know if we want to do this or have time, but I'd love to have sort of a show of hands of any people who would think they might participate in the Mother's Day PI meetings, for example.
Sure. Did you want to do that now?
Yeah, just to get an idea. I mean, I know of quite a few already, but I'd love to know if...
Yeah. I have a suggestion, because I was thinking of asking if folks have any questions for you now, because I think you just shared a lot of great information, and I want to encourage folks. Nancy Merritt is a tremendously knowledgeable resource. Nancy and her team, the Department of Peacebuilding Committee, are really doing citizen advocacy at the state of the art, as I understand it. I mean, we at the national level, we've had coaching from Sam Daly Harris, who's one of the most effective citizen organizers, I think, in existence currently. And I think I've learned his methods pretty clearly. And as far as I understand it, Nancy and her team are really at the top of the game as far as what it takes to build relationships with Congress and to move the legislative agenda with citizen advocacy. So if folks have questions for her now, I encourage you to ask them. What do you think about Nancy taking some questions and then having a show of hands for sort of a poll so people get a little more familiar?
Yeah,
maybe
that's
with,
fine. How, yeah.
Yeah. So if you have questions about what Nancy just described as far as the Department of Peacebuilding campaign, as far as the Mother's Day PI meetings, anything that you just heard about, you can raise your hand by pressing 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you think you have a longer question for later, you can email nancy@peacealliance.org. That's nancy@peacealliance.org. And yeah, if you have questions right now, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad, and I'll call on you. I see 1 so far. Let me get it. Philip Rice, go ahead. You're unmuted. What's your question or thought?
Okay, my name is pronounced Reese.
Excuse me.
No, I just wonder if you could give a presentation about what you're all about at the annual convention of Veterans for Peace, which I am a member of, which will be in August in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Veterans for Peace looks for topics. They like to have symposium, workshops, and have various ideas that are related to peace building, and so on, at the annual Veterans for Peace convention. Last year was in Chicago. It's always usually very early in August, and then this coming year it will be in Minneapolis. The Veterans for Peace Convention was in Minneapolis 10 years ago in 2008, which I attended. And here it is 10 years later, and I hope to be going again. So, you know, everything I've heard, I'm very impressed by the concern. I've always been a Dennis Kucinich supporter. As a matter of fact, about 12 or 15 years ago, he spoke at a Veterans for Peace convention in St. Louis. And, he's an amazing person. He is an honest, sincere politician, and I wish we had more people like him. And by the way, with regard to the Iran thing, I get an email. It's very conservative. It's called Newsmax, and they just sent me a thing I read that Pat Buchanan opposes President Trump on withdrawing from the agreement with Iran. He's very much he supports the agreement, and he's opposing, and he lists a bunch of reasons why it would be best for the United States to stay in that agreement. That there's all kind, it's sort of going down the a rabbit hole, so to speak, of uncertainty, and there's repercussions that we cannot even contemplate. We just don't know. But so the president has opened this Pandora's box, so to speak, and who knows? So I was very surprised, because I always think of Pat Buchanan as rather conservative and so on, but here Pat Buchanan, was very critical of President Trump. And I had to agree with all the points that Pat Buchanan made. So anyway, I just wanted to throw in my ideas here, and I've been listening carefully to what you've been talking about, and I'm glad I can get a chance to put my two cents in here. Thank you very much.
Hi, Reese. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say thank you very much for sharing. I'm glad you did. What were you going to say, Nancy?
Well, I was just going to say if you could send me your email address, we could talk about the we would love to have a presence at the Veterans for Peace convention. I'm at Nancy at peacealliance.org, and we have one of our committee members is from Chicago, so I'm thinking she would be a great person to represent us at that. If like to let her know about it. But
okay, let me Nancy
right
at peacealliance.org.
Right, right.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Please write to me, and thank you for what your group is doing. There are quite a few chapters of Veterans for Peace who are on our organization endorser list, so thank all of you for that. And thanks for the comment on Pat Buchanan. I had no idea.
Yeah, interesting possible allies at every turn. There are no other hands up right now. Does anybody else have a question and want to press one on your keypad with a question for Nancy? You were thinking there was a long wait. There's no waiting. Go straight to the front of the line. Oh, there's a question from Lynn. Go ahead, Lynn. You're unmuted.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I was just wondering if you are also connected with, codepink2.org, and there's UN, capital U, capital N, capital A, capital C.org, and you want to go to the one that UNAC.org, and go to the one when you open it, you'll see a banner, and they've got 40 or 50 different peace groups, like World Beyond War, all kinds of groups together already, and you want to go to the one where the banner says United National Anti-War Coalition. So I was just hoping to, get that out and share those. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Okay, so thanks again, Nancy, for stepping in and being flexible. And Mr. Shelton has now joined us. Welcome back, Mr. Shelton. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. Doing great. Sorry about the delay.
Okay. That's all right. That's all right. Thanks for making this work. Without further ado, I want to introduce Mr. Hillary Shelton. Mr. Shelton is Senior Vice President for Policy and Advocacy and Director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau. And I'm sure most folks are probably aware that the NAACP is the longest standing, the largest, and the most widely recognized civil rights organization in the United States. And among Mr. Shelton's main concerns in his government affairs portfolio are affirmative action, equal employment protection, access to quality education, stopping gun violence, ending racial profiling, abolition of the death penalty, access to comprehensive health care, voting rights protection, federal sentencing reform, and a host of other civil and human rights enforcement, expansion, and protection issues. So we are more than pleased to have you with us, Mr. Shelton. And as you may be aware that we've sent out an action sheet to all the folks on this call, along with the materials that you provided, the policy papers. So during the second half of the call, we're going to be doing some coaching on our monthly action, which will be to advocate for those three bills that you provided. So warm welcome to the call, and thank you for joining us.
Dan, thank you so much for having me, and thank you all for being on the call. Again, I apologize for running late. We were trying to solve yet another problem around a new bill we're trying to push for sentencing reform that will come up in the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow. So it took a little more time than we planned, but I'm just delighted to be with you this evening. As we're asked to talk about a few issues, keep in mind the NAACP is the nation's oldest and largest grassroots-based civil rights organization. We have about 2,200 membership units and located in every state in the United States. We're also, believe it or not, still on military basis, as the military was actually integrated. We were requested to come in and actually set up units to help the African-American men have a voice as they move to integrate the armed services. As you can think of, quite an awesome task. As I raised the issues that we wanted to discuss, I want to raise a couple fundamentals first. Many of you may remember just almost 4 years ago now in the Shelby versus Holder decision, we lost one of the most important protections for voting rights in the country, and that is Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. This is the provision that actually calls upon jurisdictions and states that have a history of discrimination to actually have to go through a process in which they have to actually pre-clear through the Department of Justice's voting rights section or a panel of three jurors made up of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to make sure that the changes they want to make to the time, the place, or the manner in which an election is carried out will not discriminate before the change is made. This made very good sense to us, and as we moved to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act in 2006, we actually reviewed all of these provisions. Unfortunately, in a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court in 2015, we ended up running into a problem in which the Supreme Court, again by a 5-4 very divisive decision, decided to actually scrap Section 5, submit it over to U.S. Congress to review it and to determine whether indeed it needed to be replaced. Sadly and unfortunately, it's been a very divisive and quite polarized partisan process. They ended up leaving it alone, and there's not even been a hearing on the bills that we would move to fix this problem. But as you can see, we provided for you an action alert on provisions that would actually repair the Voting Rights Act of 16 and something called the Voting Rights Advancement Act of 2017, which is set up to repair, restore, and strengthen the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In the House, it's H.R. 2978. In the Senate, 1419 is the Senate bill number. The big challenge, of course, is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Mr. Goodlatte of Virginia, has said to us in a quote that his people have not asked for this repair to be done, and as such, they've not even held hearings on the bill itself. This raises major concerns for us as we think about the kind of protections that are still necessary and the kind of trickery, gerrymandering-type processes and other problems we still have in this country. Many of you may remember that both Texas and South Carolina were trying to actually put in place photo ID bills during that time period, and both the voting rights section of the Justice Department, of course, under Mr. Eric Holder. And even the three-panel set of jurors all agreed that before they could make those changes, they'd have to reconsider how this would work, because their impact showed that, indeed, these provisions would discriminate against the poor, the elderly, racial and ethnic minorities, and women as well. So, indeed, we're still trying to push that those bills through to actually have this very important protection addressed. In addition, we've always pushed to make sure that voting could be better. In essence, even before the Supreme Court's decision, we've been trying to make a number of changes, improvements to our voting system. We believe it's shameful that the United States of America is the only industrialized nation in the world, the only industrialized nation in the world, in which you're not automatically registered to vote at the time you hit 18 years of age. We argue that even beyond that, that if our children have to actually be put in a position where many of you may know that the time our children turn 18 years of age in this country, they are automatically registered for the draft, whether they be male or female. But we believe if you can be drafted to go and have to fight in a war, then at the very least, at the same time you're old enough to be drafted, you should be old enough to vote and actually make a decision as to whether we should go to war or not. We believe in, of course, as I mentioned, automatic registration, same-day registration. That means that when you go to the polls to vote, if you find your name's not on the roster, you get out of one line, get in another line to the same polling place, register, come back and get in line, and actually cast that unfettered vote. If all goes well, have that vote counted. We also know we have to take on the issues of those that actually lose their vote when they commit a felony offense. Sadly as well, we're one of the few countries in the industrialized nations that you actually lose your right to vote if you're convicted of a crime. As a matter of fact, what's fascinating about that, even as we look at our country, the United States of America, we know that you can go to a state like Virginia and lose your right to vote if you commit a felony offense. But if you're in Vermont, you would not lose your right to vote. Even if you were an axe murderer, you could vote from your jail cell. I'll never forget having a conversation with Patrick Leahy, the former chair of the Judiciary Committee that still serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee. I presented to him the bill that we crafted that we wanted to move through and asked for his endorsement. He began to laugh for just a moment as we walked across the Capitol grounds and said, "Hillary, I apologize for my laughter, but you should know that in my state, you don't lose your right to vote when you go into prison. As a matter of fact, I actually go into prisons to campaign for my reelection." Think about that new paradigm for a moment. What if these same members of Congress that would strip away one's right to vote and get involved in actually creating things like mandatory minimum sentences to keep people in prison for unnecessary long lengths of time, had to actually go before those same people in those jail cells to actually try to get their support to be reelected so they could continue to stay in their offices? We believe these are very important provisions and many more to make sure that all Americans are able to cast that unfettered vote and have it counted. Voting is the tool that we have to use to bring about all the changes for peace, for justice, and other concerns in our society. It is a tool that we use to live up to that constitutional promise of equal protection and equal opportunity under law. We also move to address issues of actually expanding and, of actually being able to address issues of gun violence in our society. We know that as we look at the changes and the challenges and the problems, that gun violence has continued to increase. Gun-related homicides are higher than ever before. The predictions made just 5 years ago continue to sadly prove to be true. That every year we seem to lose more and more Americans, younger than ever before, people of color and others, to unnecessary gun violence. It is the most damaging and unnecessary tool that is utilized to actually either cripple Americans or even kill them, losing loved ones and others in our society. We know there's much more we can do to address the issue of gun violence. So we move to take on those issues at a number of different levels and a number of different ways. We believe in requiring universal background checks for all gun sales and transfers. banning military-style semi-automatic assault weapons to make sure that indeed they're not used, as we've seen them using drive-bys and other problems so many times in our past. Enacting new criminal penalties for straw purchases. That is, those that would go into an area that's easy to purchase a gun, literally buy them and fill their trunks up and bring them into cities and towns that very well have provisions that don't allow gun sales at all. We ran into that very same problem in Washington, D.C. What we learned in D.C., because of the ease of buying guns in places like Virginia, right next door to us, that people are buying guns, filling their trunks, bringing them into D.C., and literally selling them out of the back of their cars. But we also learned that sadly and unfortunately, under those circumstances, we had too many Americans that were dying as a result. 65% of all the guns picked up for illegal practices in Washington, D.C., interestingly enough, were bought legally in Virginia, the home of the NRA. We want to ban suspects on the terror watch list from purchasing firearms as well. If we're deeply concerned to the point that we will not let them get on an airplane and fly with the rest of us, perhaps they should not yet be able to buy a firearm. We want to provide funding to the Center for Disease Control to finally open the door and allow them to continue to do the very valuable research to see just what the impact is of guns on American people. We were successful in using that data in 1994 to pass the Brady Handgun Bill. We were successful in using that data in 1995 to pass the assault weapons ban. It's important that the American people know exactly what's going on so we can make informed decisions about who we want to vote for, who should lead our country, and who should be able to make these kind of decisions to address the concerns we have here at home. We want to take on issues and provide incentives and assist states in improving their overall reports on the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS. This is a very important system that's put in place to make sure we know what's going on, where the crimes are being committed, what's being utilized to commit those crimes, and how we move beyond that. We want to ban bump stocks and other machine gun-style firing and conversion kits and accessories and parts, because we know as people are buying these guns that shoot just a few times in a semi-automatic way, we saw what happened in Las Vegas, Nevada, when someone was able to buy bump stocks to upgrade them, to utilize them as literally fully automatic guns and kill so many people. We want to allow states to maintain and enforce their own concealed carry laws instead of having to adhere to concealed carry laws of those who might be next door and may be inconsistent with the values of those in their states. We want to also repeal all state stand-your-ground laws, a tool that's made it easier to get away, literally, with murder in so many communities, as we've sadly seen in Florida and so many other states across the country. We want to make sure we address these issues and so many more as we realize that guns are costing us not only many dollars and cents as we look at the challenges with our hospitals. And you may not very well know that about 85% of all the people that show up at hospitals with gun wounds actually have no health insurance. But the question you're asking is, what happened to our city hospital, our general hospital in the area? Why has it gone down or even out of business altogether? One of the reasons is because if someone comes in with a gunshot wound, as it should be, they have to be attended to by the doctors and the other health care providers within that hospital. But even as we saw that happen, we realized that 85% didn't have insurance, but the health system provided health care to them anyway in the most expensive form of health care that there is. Well, listen, I'll stop there for now. I'm happy to answer any questions you have about these issues and certainly anything else you may have in mind as it relates to the NAACP's agenda of what's happening in Washington.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Shelton. Really appreciate you bringing your expertise and passion and just depth of understanding around these issues to share with us. Folks, if you have a question for Mr. Shelton, please press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will look like a raised hand to me, and I'll go ahead and call on folks. The first hand that I see up is actually Geraldine Stapleton, and Geraldine is on our leadership council. She's a leader in the area of our legislative agenda. So, Geraldine, go ahead. Your mic is open.
Thank you so much for being on this call and sharing all of this information that we are so in line with. My question to you is, which bill is coming up in the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow? Which bill is that?
Oh, very good. The bill that's coming up tomorrow is a bill that was introduced by Hakeem Jeffries of New York. And I'm trying to remember the Republican co-sponsor. But it's actually H.R. Okay, let me make sure I have the number. I'm sorry. Yeah, H.R. The bill is entitled the First Step Act. I'm trying to look at the H.R. number. I know the Senate bill number is actually 1994. The title of the bill is the First Step Act. This is a bill that acts the First Step. Yep, the First Step Act. It's a bill that actually addresses the concerns around sentencing reform and actually prison reform as well. It's a bill that was introduced to try to find ways to actually lower the sentencing range for so many nonviolent offenses and other offenses, and at the same time provide additional protections for those that are in our prisons, making sure they can move through the system and get out as quickly as possible. As you know, the NAACP views our sentencing ranges as being much too high and our prisons as being much too brutal. We know that also too often our prisons are used as a tool to actually provide a place for those who may be addicted to drugs and so forth in a very criminal way, rather than addressing them in much more a health-related way, as the NAACP supports. So the two sponsors I mentioned are Hakeem Jeffries and Doug Collins, who's a Republican from Georgia. If you imagine, some of the problems we have with this bill is there's less emphasis on the issue of sentencing ranges. That is, the sentencing ranges we believe are much too long, and much more emphasis on how one matriculates once they're inside the prison. So we think the prison issues are helpful until we address the sentencing issues, the much too long sentencing issues that we have in our criminal justice system. We will not fix this problem. So that and making sure that we get rid of mandatory minimum sentences, we think they actually tie the hands of judges and make it much too difficult for judges to make informed decisions, mitigating the concerns and circumstances of a crime that may have been committed in a way that's more fair and judicious.
Oh, wonderful, because we are supporting several bills, and I'm sorry about the noise in the background. I'm about ready to have to go into another meeting. We are supporting one bill in regards to prison reform, which is has bipartisan support, which is really great at this point in time. And also was supporting the Pretrial Integrity Safety Act. That's by Senator Kamala Harris, S-1593.
Yes.
You probably know about that, but it deals with the prison situation. So anyway, thank you very, very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And let me add that Kamala Harris' bill is
the other bill that...
Yeah,
It's Grassley's bill, S-1917, and who happens to be Republican, but it's a juvenile, and also one of the reasons that we wanted to support it, it contained the juvenile solitary confinement business to limit that, you know, to a supervised confinement, you know, like to 4 hours rather than to throwing them in the shoe, which is, you know, as you know, is very, very mentally unhealthy for an adult, let alone a child.
Oh, you're absolutely right. We very strongly support those provisions as well. The concern was trying to work out with Mr.
We are in sync. Thank you again.
No, very good.
Thanks.
Just with one more issue, may be helpful. I met with Mr. Grassley yesterday, and as much as we appreciate the way that bill is going and the provisions you lifted up, there's one provision we hope he'll consider trying to amend out of the bill. There's a provision in the bill that still allows for mandatory minimum sentences. We think they're quite destructive, And judges have said on many occasions that they believe that it ties their hands in some unnecessary ways to address some of the mitigating circumstances in some of the crimes. So it's certainly a step in the right direction. And I hope that Mr. Grassley will also lead the way in eliminating those mandatory minimums. But good piece of legislation.
I looked up the number on that bill, Mr. Shelton, and that's H.R. 5682, the First Step Act.
That's very good. Thank you. Yes, indeed. So Thank you.
Am I understanding if folks were going to add that to their list, that you'd like them to speak in favor of it, but to take out the mandatory minimum aspect of it?
And Mr. Grassley's bill in the Senate, we'd want to see that happen. Mr. Jeffrey's bill in the House, we'd also like to see more impact assessment of what this means. Right now, the way that the Republicans in the House, have been running things, they have not insisted on impact assessment or the actual cost of the legislation as it's being implemented. So our hope is we can see a bill like this move through, amend it in a way that addresses the concerns we still have. Just part of the legislative process, with the hope of getting something to the president's desk that is much more complete in addressing, again, both the front-end issues of sentencing reform as well as what we call the back-end issues of prison reform.
Thank you.
So in other words, it's a billing process.
Got it. So it needs some work. You don't want to see it flow right through.
Absolutely.
I wonder if you would speak a little bit about IRPA, the Bill to End Racial and Religious Profiling Act. This is something that sure is on a lot of folks' minds in our field, and if you could just give a little bit of time to that, I think folks would really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for asking about this. IRPA is a bill that we've worked on, believe it or not, for decades, initially as a data collection bill of routine traffic stops, and now the End Racial Profiling Act, as introduced by Ben Cardin in the Senate and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee in the House. It's a piece of legislation that does a number of things that are helpful. Number one is it clearly defines what racial profiling is. I can't begin to tell you how, as I've spoken with many professional policing organizations, a misunderstanding of what racial profiling is. So it's great to have that clarification. It's actually consistent with the definition of racial profiling utilized by the U.S. Justice Department and the great guidance that was put in place and strengthened by Eric Holder during his time in office. It then makes it illegal, makes it very clear that law enforcement officials utilizing racial profiling as a tool to determine who should be stopped, detained, searched, and otherwise treated very badly on our streets. So we're happy to see that that clear understanding of making it illegal for police officers to do it. Thirdly, it actually collects data on routine traffic stops. We often make the argument that in order to manage a problem, like racial profiling or any other problem, you must first measure it. So having data collection by police officers showing us what their perception was of the person they stopped, what it calls upon them to do is utilizing PDAs and other technology. As they're stopping someone, tell us what you thought their race was, their gender, their ethnicity. We believe that's very, very important, a tool to determine whether or not police officers are actually utilizing some bias when they're stopping people on the street. It then provides for an administrative remedy. That is, it allows for a freestanding assessment of what happens when somebody actually complains. They were stopped, they believe it was for some unfair reason like racial profiling. It allows strategies for them to actually bring their case before an administrative judge and address those concerns. It also finally allows for a private right of action. What this means is that every citizen actually becomes part of the enforcement tool to prevent this awful action from continuing on our streets, our highways, and our byways. The bills have been introduced. We've had hearings in previous Congresses. We've had no hearings in the 115th Congress, the Congress that we're in right now. And certainly, this will be a great piece of legislation to very loudly and clearly say to your legislators, House and Senate, that we need to get this bill through, or among other reasons, to restore the trust and integrity that's necessary to our law enforcement officials and to allow them to be more effective in carrying out their responsibilities.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we've kept you for quite a while now, and you're probably about ready to settle into your home for the night. So I think rather than keeping you any longer, we'll probably pivot into some coaching on this action and allow you to take your leave of us if you would like to. You're welcome to stick around for the next 13 minutes of the call if you want to, but I think we've probably taken enough of your evening, and I want to just thank you really, really deeply for spending time with us and sharing your expertise. And there is a recording being made of this call, so if you would like to share it with folks, I'm happy to send you a link to the recording. It will be up on our website and available within a couple of days. And for folks on the call who would like to share this with folks in your networks, you can also send them to the Deep Advocacy page on our website to get that recording link. So, again, thank you so much, Mr. Shelton, for joining us. And I assume you'll probably want to take your leave. But, again, if you'd like to stick around, you're more than welcome.
Oh, listen, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. I look forward to following up with you and even get a chance to listen to how things came across. And I also thank you for the work that you're about to do. I really appreciate this approach to actually moving to help make our country and our local communities live up to the promises of our Constitution. I'm going to go and actually remind my family what I look like. But I appreciate the time.
Perfect.
With you.
All right. You. Appreciate it. Have a good night. Great. So now's the chance to look at how we can move forward the priorities that Mr. Shelton just outlined for us. So I'm going to ask folks who have it available to take a look at the action sheet that was sent out about an hour ago. It's one of the documents that was attached to an email that just about all of you should have received, depending on if you had registered for the call within a half an hour or more than a half hour before the call. There's one typo I noticed on the sheet, so let me bring your attention to that before it slips my mind. I noticed I mistyped the House resolution number of the second bill, the Voter Rights Advancement Act. It's S-1419, but it's H-R-2978. I reversed the 7 and the 9 when I transposed it. So H-R-2978. So just to remind you, these are the three bills that Mr. Shelton and the NAACP are asking us to promote. One is IRPA, which is to end racial and religious profiling. The second is the Voter Rights Advancement Act, and that's the one that he talked about that would restore and reinstate the provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that would make it so any state or region, a state that has a history of discrimination, a history of disenfranchisement, when they make rules that would change the availability of voting opportunities, they have to really be scrutinized to make sure that those rules are not being discriminatory. And the Voter Empowerment Act, along similar lines, would make sure to protect the franchise of the vote across the board for citizens who really should be eligible to vote. So those are the three bills that we're looking at. And I wonder, let me put down the hands that are up now. If you're looking at the action sheet, our request for this month is that you make a call to your senators and your House member. This would be three phone calls to the congressional switchboard, and you can just ask to speak to your senators and your House member, and you can look those up. If you don't know, you can Google who is my representative, who are my senators. The ask is for you to go ahead and request co-sponsorship and full support for these three bills. Is there anybody who's willing to give a shot at a role play to see what that phone call might look like? It can be very quick and simple, or it can be a little more complex. It's up to you. But just to hear another voice, trying out what that might sound like, to make a call to the congressional switchboard, get connected with your Congress member's office, and just hear your voice, letting them know something that you're in support of. These are your representatives. They're there to work for you. And I should warn you that Lori is not on the call tonight, so there's nobody there to bail us out. If we don't get a volunteer, then we don't get a volunteer. Anybody willing to to make that imaginary phone call to Congress, just to serve us all and show us what that phone call might sound like? You can press 1 on your keypad to volunteer. Be really, really simple. Oh, thank you, Ngozi. So Ngozi is also on our Leadership Council for the Cornerstone of Cultivating Personal Peace. Welcome, Ngozi.
Thank you.
And I also saw another hand go up also, so thanks, Terry, for being willing as well. Ngozi, I'd love to start these role plays by you saying ring, ring, and I'll go ahead and answer the congressional switchboard.
Okay, ring, ring.
Hello, Congressional Switchboard. How can I help you?
Yes, hi. My name is Ngozi Okosia, and I live in the district of Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And I'm very interested in sharing with you how I feel about some legislation.
Can I connect you with Ms. Waters' office?
Oh, that's great. Yes.
Sure. I'll be happy to. Hold just a moment. Buzz, buzz. Buzz, buzz. Congresswoman Waters' office, this is Dan speaking. How may I help you?
Hi, Dan. My name is Ngozi, and I'm calling you today. I wanted Congresswoman Waters to know that I'm very interested in H.R. 1498, the End of Racial and Religious Profiling Act, and I want her to take a look at that and vote for it.
Thank you very much. I will make sure to pass that along to the Congresswoman, and I appreciate your call.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So, Ngozi, before you go, I always like to do a little debrief. So how
yes,
do you feel
please.
About that? Yeah. What,
very
what did you
nervous.
Like? Okay.
Well,
right.
I was excited about doing it, but I was a little nervous because I was saying things right. So that's kind of like where my head went into.
Perfect, perfect. Was there anything that you did, that you said, that you're happy about, that you know you would want to do again if you made this call in real life?
Absolutely, absolutely. A, I would pause when I was at the reception. If I thought about like that, yes, pause. I wanted to keep going, so I was nervous. But slowing down and just being okay, just feeling more comfortable with just sharing. And more as a share.
What did you like? What do you think that you did well that you would want to take with you to do again?
Being upbeat.
Okay.
Being excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Can I tell you a couple of things that I think you did well that I want you to hold on to? Well.
Okay.
You clearly knew what the bill number was, and you knew what the bill name was. That's
okay.
You know, probably two of the most important things, that you were very clear about that. I also like that you were upbeat, friendly. Sure, that doesn't hurt at all. But, so gave the number and you gave the name of the bill and you knew what you wanted to support. And, again, you know, folks, you can advocate for one or two or all three of these bills. You know, it's really up to you. If you can look at the policy papers that we've shared, if you want to get a little more background, you can see what the NAACP has provided us. To get some background on that. You can do some of your own research if you're not sure. And again, you can do one, two, or all three. Thanks, Ngozi.
Well, thank you, Dan. So I wasn't sure to do all three. It felt like it was a lot, but that's okay?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is
okay.
These folks are working for you. You can give them a laundry list of what you like.
Okay.
You know, grocery list. Say, I'd like you to, you know, while you're there at the store, I want you to pick up some orange juice and some tofu and some greens, you know, whatever you want. You say, this is my person in Congress. I want you to end racial and religious profiling. I also want you to support the Voter Rights Advancement Act, and I also want you to support the Voter Empowerment Act. That's they work for us. And
okay, good
letting them know
feedback.
What you want. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Tell them everything you want. Sure. Absolutely. And while you're at it, you can ask him to support the Department of Peacebuilding bill.
Yes, absolutely.
While you got him on the line, H.R. 1111.
Yes.
All
okay.
Right. Thank you. Cool. Great. So we have just 4 minutes left, and I want to respect everybody's time. So there's a couple of hands that are up now, but I'm going to put them down, just assuming that those folks may have been up to volunteer for the role play, and I appreciate that. But I also want to give folks time to either ask general questions or to share what's happening in your peace-building world. I want to make sure there's a chance for shares from the field. And, Nancy, I haven't forgotten that you wanted to take a poll of folks that might be interested to make a Mother's Day visit to your members of Congress. A handful of folks have left the call, so we might not get a full counting. But let's try that now. Let's see if any folks who, and I just put all the hands down again, so wait for just a minute. If you have a sense, there's a good chance that you will go to your local congressional office, either bringing a pie or not bringing a pie, and advocating for one or more bills, primarily focusing on the Department of Peacebuilding. That's really the heart of this Mother's Day campaign. If you have a sense that that's something that you're planning to do or you might do in the next few weeks, Nancy would love to know about it. So can you press 1 on your keypad if that's sort of on your agenda and you're thinking about doing it or open to doing it, maybe coming up for you? Okay. I see the ones showing up. So far, it's about a little more than a quarter of the folks on the call. They're still here. So, and some folks may, not be dialed in to what we're doing, but that gives us a sense for now that some folks are thinking about it. Thank you. So I'll put those hands down. And just in the remaining 2 minutes, if you have something burning to share or to ask, now is the time. Patty, go ahead. What's on your mind? Patty LaTaille is another leader in our Leadership Council for the Cornerstone of Humanizing Justice Systems. Welcome, Patty. What's on your mind?
Hi. Really quickly, just wanted to say thank you and have the opportunity to have our speaker on was just amazing. Just wanted to encourage everyone to make those calls, but also to email potentially, and if they're into community organizing, to get some petitions filled in as well. So it's another route to finding some sort of justice and promoting our peace agenda.
Terrific. Thank you, Patty. And also, on that note, I'll also point out that attached to the policy papers that the NAACP shared with us and we've shared with you, there are some sample letters attached to those as well. So that's another way to go. J. David Swift, you've had your hand up a couple of times. I want to make sure to get you. Go ahead. Your mic is open.
Yes. I want to say thank you. I wanted to say that the role play was excellent. Both of you were very, very good. And I'm inspired by it. One thing that maybe she could have said was about the co-sponsorship. It might have been a little premature because we don't know if he was going to sponsor or she were going to sponsor it. Co-sponsoring, I mean, we're going to even sign it, let alone co-sponsoring.
So you're curious about the co-sponsorship question, about whether that makes sense to jump into. Are you still there, David?
Yes, I'm sorry. My point was that she didn't mention ask the representative to co-sponsor the bills.
They didn't mention. Okay, yeah, so you'd like to hear that come out. Yeah, that co-sponsor.
Well, that was the only thing I could find that could have been improved, but thank you very much. It's very good.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks, David. We're at the top of the hour, but I see Nancy's hand has got up, so let's see if Nancy wants to share something. Go ahead, Nancy. Your mic is open.
Well, I was just going to say thank you for those who are doing your pie meetings. And when you do them, please send me an email just with a brief description and a picture of you with the people in the office. And secondly, I'd like to invite everybody to the California Second Monday call coming up on the 14th. The topic is peace as a women's issue. And everybody's invited. You don't have to be from California. So if you are not from California and you want to get the email, the e-blast about it, you could write to me and I'll send that to you.
Great. Thank you, Nancy. And just to remind folks again to connect with Nancy about the California call, or if you have any questions about the pie the Pie Advocacy Days, Mother's Day Piece of the Pie campaign, nancy@peacealliance.org. And I think that's about it for us. I'll close with a closing quote, and I'm just going to pull out my favorite one because it keeps me focused on the world I want to create. And it's a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of our dreams." So I'll leave you all with that, and in about 10 seconds, I'm going to unmute everybody's mic so you can say goodnight to each other if you like. Thanks to you all for joining us. Your mics are all unmuted, and hope to talk to you again next month.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Nice.
Wonderful call. So appreciative.
Yes.
I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Oh. Namaste.
Good night.
Namaste.
That's a love and light, joy and peace. Oh.